starting a press conference, Gazprom in Eastern Asia, entry into Asia-Pacific markets. This press conference is attended by Deputy Chairman of the Management Committee, Mr. Vitaly Markelov, and Mr. Alexander Medvedev, also Deputy Chairman of the Management Committee. We also have Member of the Management Committee, Head of Department, Mr. Vyacheslav Mykhaylenko, Head of Department, Mr. Andrei Skripniuk, CEO of Gazprom Export, Ms. Elena Burmistrova. So the floor goes over to the speakers, and we have 1 hour of the press conference today. Mr. Medvedev, please. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, members of the media here in St. Petersburg and also listening to us over the webcast, I think all Russian media representatives are in a winning mood today following the soccer game yesterday, and I hope this carries over into this press conference, which is dedicated to a very important subject, Gazprom's business development in eastern parts of the country and also in Asia and Pacific markets. Gazprom has decided to opt for strategic diversification, be it geographic diversification and also product diversification, which we are fast-tracking. Mr. Markelov is going to explain the key projects to you. Before he starts, I would like to underline it that the results achieved so far already, and the main result is construction of the Paraiba-Siberia pipeline, as well as the start of gas deliveries to China in the fourth quarter of 2019. So all of these results are the very beginning just yet, and you're going to find out more during this press conference. Mr. Markelov, over to you.
Good morning, colleagues. I would like to congratulate you on Russia's national team winning a soccer game yesterday against Saudi Arabia. I would also like to congratulate everyone on the anniversary we are celebrating this year. That's the 10th anniversary of Gazprom's Eastern Gas Development Program. It started with an extension of a pipeline from Komsomolsk on the Amur to Khabarovsk, and then we kept on with annual commissioning of other projects such as Sakhalin 2, the Sakhalin-Khabarovsk-Vladivostok pipelines, and a pipeline in Kamchatka. Currently, we are running a very important project called the Power of Siberia. With its commencement starting next year, it will open up an array of opportunities and a new destination towards the People's Republic of China. There is a lot of work ongoing. Last week, I attended a number of facilities under construction to supervise their development, and I'll be happy to share my impressions during this press conference. Okay, we're ready to take your questions, starting with the media team in St. Petersburg. Dmitry Andreev, Interfax. I have a question on the Power of Siberia. Can you explain the 30 and 38 billion cubic meter looping projects? I'm wondering how many kilometers of pipeline you would need, how many tons of pipes, and when these are going to be procured. Speaking of the Power of Siberia, we are completing construction of the trunk pipeline, and we only have about 80 kilometers or so remaining on the welding pad. We're cleaning up some of the debris on certain sites, and we are testing the already welded pipes. We're building some auxiliary facilities in the areas of telecommunication and remote control for operational control. On the Chayande field, we are running at full swing. By the end of the year, we will have tested technological pipelines already. This year, we're going to commission two facilities, which is the water intake treatment facility and the water discharge treatment facility. And then we'll set up power generation to feed electric power on the site. So construction is going in line with the plan, sometimes ahead of the plan, especially when it comes to the trunk pipeline itself. We have absolutely no doubt that by the end of December next year, we will have commissioned all of the facilities and we will have started gas deliveries in line with the contract. Now, Amur gas processing plant. We are running again on full steam on phase one. The foundation has been laid already. By the end of June, we'll have heavy equipment, heavy-duty equipment, which will be taken on site directly from the Zee pier and installed there. We have the largest ever crane in the world, 1,600 tons. There are two in the world. One is in Russia, and one is our crane at the Amur gas processing plant to install heavy-duty equipment. This facility is running on schedule, so phase one will have being commissioned by the end of this year. Other facilities in, within the scope of Power of Siberia pipeline and the Chiyanda pipe and the Chiyanda field. Well, we are drilling wells today for further expansion of the field, and we are building the collection point. The Power of Siberia, again, we are getting ready to build the loopings and additional pumping stations, so it's pretty much in line with the schedule. Thank you. Next question, please. TASS, Anna Artemova. I have a question regarding your negotiations with the Chinese on further deliveries. Do you have an understanding of the volumes and the timing of the new contract coming? Answer. We are negotiating with CNPC to discuss gas deliveries via the eastern route, and we cannot outline the timing currently because, well, it took a while to discuss the first contract with the Power of Siberia 1, and we would expect to finalize negotiations by the end of 2018. That's our wish. I would like to follow up. This expectation is related to the following fact. China is really demonstrating additional demand for gas, which they put forth in the negotiations, and this is another factor to suggest that the negotiations are to be finalized within the timeline specified. Next question from Maria Buravtseva, RBK, or RBC. Gazprom is developing pipelines in the eastern parts of Russia. Power of Siberia is one of the largest, okay? And you have suggested that it would feed gas to China. Whether these pipelines could also be used to feed gas to Russian consumers, or is it going to be a transit pipe only? If you do plan to distribute gas from that pipeline in Russia, then what contracts have been made already, and who are going to be the major consumers? Thank you. Thank you for your question. The Power of Siberia pipeline does provide for an opportunity to feed gas to Russian off-takers in the regions of Amur and Yakutia. Particular off-takers have not been identified as yet. We keep negotiating with the regional administrations of the Amur region and the Republic of Yakutia. So far, we have not identified any particular specific off-takers. Next question, please. Good morning. I'm Lushkovsky from St. Petersburg Vedomosti. I have a question regarding the managerial rather than operational side of the business. Here in St. Petersburg, we're interested in Lakhta's center. Lakhta center is being completed and Gazprom is moving into that. Can you further explain this program, at least some major elements of that, the timeline, the HR element, how this is going to be tackled? Thank you. Apologies, but this question is not on the subject of this press conference today, so we're going to skip that. Actually, you see the tower has been completed and finishing the interior. The HR side is well covered. We have the people to work there. Well, I have a few questions on Iran LNG. Whether Gazprom's involvement in completion of that facility is feasible, what is the cost-sharing ratio? Whom are you going to involve as a technological partner? And when is Gazprom going to come up with its proposition to the Iranian side? And finally, is there a risk of giving up all Iranian projects altogether due to the risk of additional sanctions? Thank you. I've visited the site to see the facility as it currently stands in incomplete construction. Admittedly, a power plant has already been commissioned and heavy-duty equipment has been installed. It's currently a conserved site, and the Iranians have proposed Gazprom to join in. We have an MOU signed. And currently, Gazprom is auditing the facility with a due diligence exercise. It's too early to state that we are entering that project. Not yet. We are doing a technical audit, a due diligence exercise, and, once we have fully assessed the current condition of the facility, we'll start discussions as to our potential involvement. Regarding your question about the sanctions. You are aware that European countries have expressed their discontent with further threat of sanctions, given that the United States have decided to give up the Iranian deal. Well, we understand the risks, and you can't win if you take that risk. Obviously, we are looking into all the risks, project risks, be it sanctions risks, and then we'll decide based on the situation. Next question, please. Let's get some questions from Moscow. Please go ahead. Starting with TASS, please. I would like to follow up on Iran. The original plan was to set up project documentation as early as in May, considering Gazprom's involvement in projects in that country. Has this effort been completed, and when is your final decision coming? Thank you. Thank you so much. According to the MOU, we were supposed to come up with our proposals based on the feasibility analysis, having studied the documents put forth by the Iranian side. This analysis has been completed by now, and we are starting a series of discussions with our Iranian partners regarding the four projects in question. So, this means analysis, negotiations, consideration of the contract, its terms and conditions, and then we'll do the decision making. Thank you. Next question, please. Thank you. My name is Yulia Natarova, NHK from Japan. That's a public television in Japan. I have two questions. One is the possibility. One relates to the possibility of a pipeline between Russia via North Korea to South Korea. Back in 2011, there were media reports about Gazprom and your partners in South Korea were discussing potentially whether this project could be feasible. But then the situation around North Korea aggravated and the discussions were suspended. The situation is getting normalized these days, and I'm wondering if you have any revitalization of that project and whether you think it's promising or prospective. My other question is about a different media report considering Sakhalin 1 to Sakhalin 2 gas sales, from Sakhalin 1 to Sakhalin 2, and media reported that these negotiations are set to be finalized very soon. Is that really true? Thank you for your question. regarding the pipeline project to South Korea via North Korea, well, it's not a new project. We started discussing it as early as in 2011 with the Koreans. So we picked some routes and we ran discussions with North Korea as well as South Korea. But then, as you rightly put it, the relations between the two Koreas aggravated significantly. So the talks were suspended. As of today, the political situation seems to be different. And the South Korean side has already approached Gazprom to recommence the project. We ran a series of discussions to consider that, and these series of discussions is going on. I don't think I can comment any further, but the discussions are ongoing with the South Korean side. Regarding Sakhalin 1, well, as you may be aware, Sakhalin Energy and Sakhalin 2 have been negotiating for quite a while. As a shareholder of Sakhalin 2, we are and Sakhalin 1 as a major shareholder at Sakhalin 1. We are not only aware of these discussions, but we can also impact these discussions. The same is true for Rosneft. Although their share in Sakhalin 1 is less than Gazprom's share in Sakhalin 2, well, you might be targeting your question mostly towards the pricing element of that, right? On top of the pricing terms, any projects of that scale have other key parameters which are reflected in the financials and economics of the project, and hence are involved in the discussions as well. It's the start of these deliveries, as well as the profile, volumes, potential timing of these deliveries. On top of gas from Sakhalin 1, the scope of these discussions may include other projects, that is, Rosneft's projects in the Far East of Russia. So, it's not only Sakhalin 1 that could be the user of this gas. It's optimally, all of the gas would be within Gazprom's and Sakhalin Energy's portfolio, and that would enable optimizing all the key metrics and key parameters that I have mentioned. Negotiations like it quiet, you know, and timing, well, decision will come rather soon, because as you are aware, Sakhalin 2 project has already got a positive review from the Russian state expert assessment. Rosexpertise has endorsed it, which is very important as a step. As initially planned, we would like to take the final investment decision. Well, if we can't do that in the fourth quarter this year, then at the latest we'd want it in the first quarter next year, especially given that we have all the prerequisites for a positive final investment decision to that end. I believe that my colleagues from Sakhalin 1, including Exxon and Rosneft, are interested in finalizing the discussions sooner rather than later. And as is customary here, we would like to get a long-term and mutually beneficial solution. Thank you. Next question from Energy Intelligence. Vitaly Sokolov asking a question. I have a follow-up to the previously raised subject of Sakhalin 1 and Sakhalin 2. If I get it right, The most recent commercial proposition was sent by Sakhalin Energy to Sakhalin 1 consortium in March this year. Whether the consortium of Sakhalin 1 has responded to that proposition, if not, when would you expect that response to come? Since you have mentioned end of this year, early next year as the final investment decision point, when do you need to finalize the negotiations and identify the resource base to expand Sakhalin 2 project? You also mentioned other Rosneft's projects could be involved into the scope of your agreement. Are you referring to the Eastern Oil and Chemical Company or other projects? If so, what are these? And another question, if I may, would the development of your CNPC negotiations to deliver gas from the Far East depend on your success between Sakhalin Energy and Sakhalin 1? Because if you agree with Sakhalin 1, you'll have more gas and you'll have more gas available for deliveries. Thank you. Since we are targeting the final investment decision for the fourth quarter this year or first quarter next year, that would mean that the negotiations are to be finalized before this potential event occurs. Considering expansion of this perimeter, Rosneft has projects in the Far East, and this could be, and these could be enclosed into the scope. Their demand, is known to us, and they are supposed to approach the one who has gas. I wouldn't really dwell upon the specifics or any further details of these discussions. I know that the outcome is more important than the process, of course. And now, CNPC element. Let me answer that question. Negotiations with CNPC are not linked with Sakhalin 1 and Sakhalin 2 negotiations. As of today, there is no need, simply. Thank you. Any further question? RIA Novosti, please go ahead. Good morning, the Liberal Press. I have a question about gas deliveries to Russian regions in the Far East, Khabarovsk and Primorsk Krais, as well as Kamchatka. What are Gazprom going to do there? Kamchatka seems to be facing shortage of gas with the decline of production, and you don't have enough gas to supply it to Kamchatka. And Exxon is leaving the Khabarovsk region by 2020. Is Gazprom going to substitute their gas? And also Primorsk Krai expansion of Sakhalin-Khabarovsk to Vladivostok pipeline, when that expansion is going to be finalized, and when are you going to supply enough gas to the Primorsk Krai in Russia in fall? And then another question, what's the Gazprom's estimate of gas consumption in the Far East? Would you have enough resource base and the capacity of your transportation network in order to satisfy the demand of Russian regions, not to the detriment of gas deliveries to, let's say, China, of course? Okay, this question must be asked at the next press conference, which is dedicated to gas deliveries to the domestic market. Let us take it over to the next press conference, with the exception of Kamchatka. Thank you. Mr. Merkel responding. Gas deliveries to Kamchatka. I think I mentioned that in my opening statement. We are going to celebrate gas deliveries to Petropavlovsk Kamchatka next year, because that's the anniversary of, 2020. That would mark the 10th year anniversary of gas deliveries to Petropavlovsk. We are now doing a geological survey onshore, which is going to be finalized in the nearest future. We're building a pump compressor station in order to maintain flood production of 400 million cubic meters per annum. That's the current level. Other regions, Sakhalin, Khabarovsk, Vladivostok pipeline, as well as production capacities, suffice to supply gas to domestic off-takers and consumers. Thank you. Further questions, please. RIA Novosti. Maria Grabarь from RIA Novosti. I have a question regarding the Iran to Pakistan to India pipeline. Whether Gazprom has an understanding what your share is going to be like in that JV, what's the capex volume required, and whether gas could be coming from Iranian fields that could be developed by Gazprom as a possibility. Could you be involved with your Indian partners to produce gas in Iran? And my other question relates to Pakistan. When are you going to sign a contract to deliver LNG to Pakistan? What the volume could be like, and when could you start these deliveries? Thank you. Thank you so much. In line with the MOU signed with the Iranian partner, Petrochemical Company of Iran, we are considering potential involvement with four fields. I answered that question earlier, and I explained the current status. We are looking into particular routes of gas deliveries from these fields, and one option is Iran to Pakistan to India, which you are asking about. We have signed an agreement to support this project with the Iranian ministry, but it hasn't been signed as yet by the Pakistani partners. It is under review by Pakistan. The same is true for India. The document in question provides for a FEED study, which will answer pretty much all the questions you have just asked. So far, we have not commenced that work as yet. And regarding the second part of your question on Pakistan, Gazprom Group indeed signed, submitted a commercial proposition, a commercial offer, back in March 2018, but we have not received any responses yet. That is a tender bid, so that tender has not been, the results of that tender have not been announced as yet. We're waiting. And just as a follow-up, Pakistan has a provisional government on the 31st of May. The government has resigned, given the elections pending. Once the new government enters office, then we'll have a further impetus to the development of our relationship. Energy intelligence, next question. Thank you. I'm wondering if you are discussing potential involvement of Gazprom in the construction of a pipeline from Iran to Oman. We've seen media reports as of recent that Gazprom was invited to participate. Whether you are discussing these options and what the prospects are. What are the prospects? Is that part of a larger-scale project to produce from one of the fields in question? Or let me reword that. Would you consider delivering gas from Kesh, which is one of the fields you're going to potentially produce from? Are you going to deliver gas to Oman? Please correct me if I'm wrong. Well, on top of Kesh, we have Northern Pars and Sarifar and Sabrzadeh. We are discussing potential involvement in these four projects. We are thinking how to monetize gas from these fields and where to ship that gas, including pipeline shipments, which has just been discussed in the previous question. Pipeline deliveries could happen via the Iran to Oman pipeline, which you mentioned. We can do LNG shipments. We are considering a variety of options. Thank you. Thank you. Next question, please. Thank you. I have a question about the Amur gas processing plant. Timing, capex volume, shipment of products, and what's the IRR? What's the payback on that investment? And Amur gas processing plant would be the largest one in Russia. It was like 50 years ago when the last facility of this sort was was constructed. Gazprom management, including Mr. M. Vyakhirev and Mr. Viktor Chernomyrdin, were involved with the last facility built 50 years ago. So we are building that anew. It's the most recent, most cutting-edge plant licensed by Linde. Construction of the first phase has already been started, which is to be commissioned in 2021. Full commissioning of the plant is targeted for 2023. Our idea is that the IRR would make it an efficient project and would be able to ship all the processing products, be it helium or ethane or propane or butane, to Amur gas chemical complex constructed by Sibur. So that will be a highly efficient project. We are managing our costs, of course, to make sure that the project is efficient and meets the targets that you have just outlined. Ms. Anastasia Gudyeva from Argus Media is asking online, when are you going to sign contracts from third train of Sakhalin 2, and for how long are they going to be made? When is the extension being signed? Frankly, you have touched upon a subject which has not ripened fully as yet. Our negotiations with the Russian government and state authorities' representatives have discussed that as in the meeting of the Supervisory Council of Sakhalin 2, and extension of the product sharing agreement will be decided upon once we have finalized the negotiations of phase 3 of Sakhalin 2, which cannot but affect the production sharing agreement extension. The third train must come first. But the government is fully aware of the issue, and as soon as that happens, we'll let you know. Okay, let's get over to Moscow once again. Any questions there? No questions. Then thank you. Over to St. Pete. If there are further questions here, you're welcome. Questions from Dmitry Matveev as a follow-up to Mr. Markelov. The 30 and 38 billion cubic meter loopings on Power of Siberia. Could you again mention the timing, the kilometers of length, and the tonnage of those pipes? Question, why are you asking? The tonnage of pipes. Interesting. The capacity of trunk pipeline is based on the volume of gas to be delivered in line with the contract. As far as the particular loopings are concerned, I can't really tell you out of the top of my head. Project design documentation is underway, where those loopings are happening, in which particular location, we can't tell you. The compressor stations and the loopings will be in sync to match the delivery volumes targeted in the contract. Obviously, as Kvikta field gets connected as well, it's not only about the loopings. Thank you. Any further question? Any questions from Moscow? TASS, please. Could we get back to the subject of China? On numerous occasions, you have mentioned the country is prepared to consume more Russian gas, but we haven't heard any news about the Western route. Is that still promising? Answering very briefly, it is promising. There are some good prospects, which is apparent. The question is when that prospect comes into reality in the form of particular agreements or arrangements. You may have seen consensus. You may have seen there are different numbers in terms of future demand forecast. And again, we hear numbers such as 500 billion cubic meters in demand, like a 10% increase. You can easily find that in Chinese sources. There is no way back strategically because coal is going to come down as a share of the energy mix, and that will be happening very fast. This is supported by very simple numbers. The Chinese have made their calculation whether it's more feasible to convert their economy into gas or waste huge amounts of money to treat lung diseases and pay health care benefits compensations. These numbers are available from the World Health Organization. They're easy to find. I wouldn't quote them now because I did that on other occasions previously. So what's the point of repeating? I would add here that China is one of the most promising gas markets in the world. Their consumption volumes are growing. In 2017, their consumption went up by, by 15%. The consumption in China went up by 15% in 2017. So further negotiations of additional deliveries are now held by the Chinese partners with pretty much everyone. This relates to pipeline gas as well as LNG. And currently, China is looking at their needs in different regions, and depending on their demand, will further handle negotiations with respective partners. Thank you. Next question, please. I have a question about the part of Siberia. You mentioned that potential Russian off-takers could be available and you're negotiating currently. You're saying that it's 38 billion cubic meters of the total capacity of this pipeline. Do you have an understanding which part of the 38 billion cubic meters going to China and which is to Russian supply off-takers? Answer, 38 billion cubic meters is our export volume to China. So I don't quite understand your question. Please clarify. How much is going to Russian off-takers using the Power of Siberia pipeline? You're saying you're negotiating with potential off-takers in Yakutia, for example. You may have heard from the moderator that demand from households and industrial off-takers, the distribution, etc., will be handled by Mr. Gennady Selesnov. By Mr. Selesnov, who's going to have a press conference next time he's in touch with current and future off-takers, whether any particular demand has been claimed and what's the real demand is, all of these questions might will be handled by Mr. Selesnov. Is that happening when? Tomorrow? No. Next week. Next week, that is. So you'd better ask it to him. Please come by. So we wouldn't want to take answers from his mouth. Okay. Next question on the subject of our press conference today. And just as a follow-up on the part of Siberia, I'm going to reword my colleague's question to get to our... is that about the tonnage? No? No. Yeah, by the way, rather the loopings, which you enjoy so much. So my question is... As far as we know, the capacity of Power of Siberia could be up to 48 billion cubic meters. 42 will be processed by the Amur gas processing plant to convert those into 38 billion cubic meters fed into China. So that leaves us with 6 billion cubic meters. Some part will be lost on the way with the compressor stations and elsewhere. My colleague is probably wondering how much gas may potentially remain for Russian domestic off-takers and whether there is there are any grounds to expand the capacity by those loopings you enjoy so much. Thank you. Frankly, I didn't know, I didn't imagine how important a project the loopings are as part of the Power of Siberia. Well, I think I'm going to repeat what has been mentioned already. These questions would rather be handled at the next press conference. So let's leave out all Russian domestic deliveries for the next press conference, be it current or potential ones. I can simply repeat what Mr. Miller mentioned on numerous occasions. Before gas is produced or transported, it must be sold, and that applies to external off-takers in the exports markets as well as the domestic ones. Okay, any further questions from Moscow? No? Over to St. Pete, any questions here? No? Then final question online. From Nezhdorodova, S&P Golden Platz. What's the Gazprom's production potential in the region in the midterm and in the long term? In other words, what gas and oil markets in the region would be available for Gazprom in the future? Thank you. Well, production potential in eastern Siberia and in the Far East. We have four gas production centers: Krasnoyarsk Krai, Irkutsk hub, Yakutsk hub, and also the Sea of Okhotsk. These are major fields. I'm referring to Kavikta and Chayanda. These are major fields we are developing today. Further surveys and exploration efforts are ongoing in Yakutia and Irkutsk. So that is under development now. The potential is huge. The potential is immense in Sakhalin as well. So that's a strategic region for Gazprom. So we're working hard on exploration efforts. The work we have been doing so far targets to satisfy the demand of domestic off-takers, first and foremost, and you know that we have some exports capacities already. From Sakhalin and to China via the Power of Siberia from Irkutsk and Yakutsk, the Kavikta and Chayanda. Well, I don't think I can give you any specific number because the number is changing every day, given a huge volume of exploration efforts. By the way, you have the reserve numbers in the presentation distributed, which effectively explains Gazprom's potential in eastern Siberia and the Far East and in the Asian Pacific. I would put this blame on you for skipping a very important regional event, that is the start of LNG deliveries from Gazprom to India, which had a major big launch involving leadership of the energy business in India, and also Gazprom. This is a historic event with new deliveries to a new market. That's a long-term contract of gas supplies to India. And Elena could briefly follow up. Yes, I'm really surprised to see a lack of interest, because equally, like China, India is a very important market as of today and also with a future perspective. On the 4th of June, we can proudly mention it, our first tanker arrived in Dahej port in India. That's the start of a new relationship and a new quality of that relationship. We're going to keep working with GAIL. And a long-term contract up until 20 years looking forward, which is a major achievement, and my congratulations to Gazprom Group entering a new global market. So all of our colleagues, congratulate all of my colleagues involved in that major effort. I can proudly say that we expand our geographies annually, so I hope the LNG portfolio will be expanding as well, with new promising markets discovered not only in Asia and Pacific, but possibly in other locations elsewhere in the world. Thank you. Thank you. This concludes this press conference, and we're meeting next time on the 20th of June. Domestic deliveries and gas development program in Russia. And let's get prepped for the next soccer game between the Russian national team and Egypt. Thank you.